This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. As I record today's intro, it is Tuesday, June 3rd, and it looks like we are in the beginning or in the middle of our very first heat wave of the year. Yesterday, it was close to 80. Today, it was 82 when I got out of work. The rest of the week, it's supposed to be 80-ish. So it looks like summer is here to stay, finally, and hopefully we can get away from some of these late frosts that we've been getting. It's my understanding that there are some places in higher elevation, both here in Pennsylvania and in New York, that had some frost warnings over the last few days, which is really concerning for us in New York, because it seems like the years where we have late frost, we don't have a good apple orchard going. Like our apple trees don't grow very well. After talking to some apple guys, like apple tree professionals, I guess you could say, I come to find out that if the apple trees have budded and then there's a heavy frost after the buds come out, that you are very likely to not have a good apple crop. So we're really hoping that that doesn't happen. I was there at the cabin just a few days ago. Those of you who follow us on Instagram, you saw some of my food plotting updates, but I didn't see any buds on the apple trees yet. So hopefully we're not quite in the hot seat just yet. But again, with these warm weathers coming and the warmer climate coming along, hopefully that means we are out of the woods before the buds even come. But if we have any issues like that, I'll be sure to keep you guys updated, because if we're having that issue, you may be having the same issue. Now, today's episode is, we welcome a new guest, Brian Hallbly of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Brian is a fellow podcaster on the Sportsman's Empire Network. And I didn't know this before, but I found out in this conversation that Brian was the co-host of the Habitat podcast. So in this podcast, as I'm sure you could imagine, we talk a little bit about waterfowl, specifically waterfowl for the beginner. Myself, I've only been waterfowl hunting once ever, and I went with my cousin and some of his friends who knew what the deal was and pretty much set everything up, and I just sat there and waited for the ducks to come in and pulled the trigger when I needed to. So Brian and I talk about some beginner stuff with that, how to identify ducks, how to set up a spread, how many decoys you need, stuff like that. So a really intro conversation to waterfowl. But we also talked about some food plotting stuff, specifically some weed battles, you know, what to expect when it comes to starting a brand new food plot, and some of those challenges that you're almost guaranteed to face at one point or another in your food plotting journey. Some of them you may be able to avoid based on this conversation, and others you may just have to prepare yourself because it's almost inevitable that you're going to face them. So whatever the case may be, if you guys are, you know, beginner food plotters or seasoned food plotters who maybe are running into an issue that you're not sure how to solve, this episode is going to be for you. And I'm really excited. I had a really good time recording this one. So Brian, thanks a lot for joining us for this podcast. Now, before we get into this podcast, I do have some really exciting news. On our YouTube channel, I am looking to be starting a brand new series pretty much as soon as possible. I think tomorrow I might be getting out to record the very first episode. Now, what this series is going to be is going to be very specific, and I'm going to be reviewing bows, but we all know that the bow reviews out there are a dime a dozen. There are tons of guys who do it, and the ones who do them well. But what I noticed is there doesn't seem to be very many bow reviews for people like me with shorter draw lengths. So I called up a local shop. If you guys are from the area in Milford, Pennsylvania, there's an archery shop called Silver Birch Archery. And Russell is the owner of the shop over there. I gave him a call on Friday and we got to talking. And he was more than happy to team up with me. And we're going to do some reviews for shorter draw length guys. It looks like the first couple that I'm going to be doing are going to be the Matthews Lift X and the Matthews Lift X SD. And my goal is to A, review each of them individually, but then compare them and see, you know, are you really getting a benefit as a short draw guy if you go with the shorter axle to axle specifically versus, you know, the regular X. We're also going to do the same thing with the Hoyt RX9 and the Hoyt RX9 SD short draw, and then possibly the same thing with the Alpha and the Alpha short draw. So I'm really, really excited to start that series. Now, if there's any other bow that you would like tested, it doesn't need to be specific for short draw guys. So if you want us to test out, say, a PSE Mach 30, or if you want us to test out the new Prime, leave a comment down below. Leave a comment on Instagram. Drop us a DM on Instagram. That's wingandtail.outdoors. Anywhere you can get in touch with me, send me an email, wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. Wherever you feel you would like to reach out to us, let me know what other bows you would like us to test. And hopefully we can do the legwork for you so that way you can make an educated decision when it comes time to order your next bow. Other than that, guys, I don't really have any other updates. Remember, we are making some arrows now, guys. We are making the Truth Sticks custom arrows. Remember, we have three different types. We have the OG Sticks, which is a 246, the Truck Sticks, which are a 300, and also crossbow bolts that are the Thunder Sticks. All of them are built with FireKnock Science and FireKnock technology. So if you've been listening to our Science of Arrow Flight series, these arrows utilize all of the benefits of the FireKnock Science. Remember, if you leave a comment down below, a 5-star review on this podcast channel, I'm going to ship you your arrows for free. If you follow us on Instagram and YouTube as well. I'm going to take $5 off your order for each. So that's $5 for Instagram, $5 for YouTube, and then free shipping for leaving a 5-star review below. And that'll save you somewhere between $20 and $25 on a dozen, depending on where you live in the country. So with that being said, I've rambled on here for the intro way longer than I wanted to. I apologize for that. One more thing, for those of you watching on YouTube, I am wearing the fresh Rat Getter Sense t-shirt right now. And on the back, let me see if I can turn around for you. On the back is a sick, sick, massive blown up buck. I mean, I absolutely love the shirt. It fits really great. The color is awesome. And it's got the little American flag here on the chest. So once again, I want to thank you guys for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. And until next week, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen.
Wing and Tail Boys podcast is brought to you by Truthsticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truthsticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truthsticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. Today, I got to be honest, I'm a little flustered. I'm running some new equipment, and I have had nothing but headaches trying to get this stuff going today. Our guest, Brian Hallbly, has been kind enough to be patient with me today. So thank you for that. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. I'm really excited for today's episode. We kind of touched before this, kind of talked about some of the issues that I've been having, and we kind of got to relate to each other on that. You know, I believe you kind of started podcasting around the same time I did, right? I think you're right around 50 episodes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 57 launched today. And then, like I said, I was a co-host on the Habitat podcast for 6+ years. Been doing it for a little while.
All right. So talk to me real quick about your first year, man. How's it been? Well, obviously it wasn't really the beginning for you because you were a co-host on another podcast, but what's it been like running your own, having your own, being your own host and kind of starting somewhat from scratch again?
It's been interesting to say the least. Super enjoyable. Didn't know if I was going to last the first month, let alone the first year, but episode 52, we do a weekly show. So episode 52 was 1 year, just about 5 episodes back. So excited to hit that 1 year mark, and things kind of started moving real fast once I hit that 1 year mark. I got a lot of partners that, were kind of waiting in the wings just to make sure that, I was going to be consistent and really built the Instagram platform up. But, Migration Waterfowl's really taken off, and it's been a fun ride, and I'm looking forward to what the next year brings.
Yeah, man, I checked out that Instagram. I mean, you're cruising. I think you're almost at like 11,000 followers, if I'm not mistaken, man. Yeah. So you got a nice production going on there. I had kind of the same experience. The very beginning of this was very daunting. It was kind of like, yeah, get people to come on your show and just start talking and hopefully people like what they hear. And I'm just kind of like, thrown to the wolves in a sense. But I love to talk outdoors. I love to talk hunting. I wouldn't consider myself like a master in just about anything. I just like getting out in the woods and I want to get better at what I do. And I just kind of saw this as a really great avenue to meet new people and learn new things and kind of find my way through all this without having to do it completely from scratch on my own. And so far it's been great. I'm coming up on a year now. This is, I think this is when this post is going to be my third or 44th episode. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm coming up on that first year. And I think...
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. And I think once I make it to that mark, I think it's going to be like a nice exhale kind of thing. And sure. It's like that first, I was thinking about doing like a milestone episode at half a year, but I felt like that was kind of setting my bar a little too low. So I was like, no, we're going to make it the full year. And then, we'll do something special for that, For today's episode, what I would like to get into is talking a bit about spring food plots, which may be a little, different for your particular listeners being waterfowl. And sure. Then, if we have the time, talking a little bit about how someone would get into waterfowl as an absolute beginner. So if we could get started, Talk to me about your history with food plots. Like, how long have you managed your own farms? How long have you been food plotting your own stuff?
Yeah, so back in the late 90s, I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm from Western Pennsylvania. Grew up deer hunting in Pennsylvania at the time when there was a lot of hunters. A lot of deer died young. We didn't really get the age structure until they started putting some antler restrictions on there. So I'm only about 20 minutes from Ohio, and I became interested in hunting Ohio. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I started exploring hunting over there, and met a friend at an archery shoot who actually owned some property in eastern Ohio, and he was into food plotting, and he was like, hey, if you want to come hunt my place, I could always use a hand. So that kind of jump-started my time in the whitetail food plot habitat style management. There wasn't much back then. Whitetail Institute was like one of the only like major brand food plots that you could pick up. Most people just planted mill run stuff from the feed store, and that kind of kicked it off for me, and it's been a rabbit hole ever since.
It really is a rabbit hole, man. I mean, the more I learn, the more I realize I know nothing. And if I think I got something figured out, the next year humbles me so much.
Sure.
To give you a little bit of background on myself, my family purchased our first property, I think like 5 years ago, in upstate New York. I'm also from Pennsylvania, but I'm on the eastern side. Right. I'm about, I don't know, I think it's like 40 minutes south of the northern border of New Jersey and New York. Okay. And then if I go east, I'm about another 45 minutes, maybe an hour from the border there. And we kind of jumped in head first to the food plotting, not really knowing anything about what we were doing at first. First year, we had some success, not a whole lot. And then, you know, each year we figure something new out and something else seems to go wrong. But it seems like over this last year or two, we're really trying to focus on the no-till system. And after like the third year, I think it finally started to register that it's the long haul type of thing. It's not like no-till isn't something that you're going to get instantaneous results from. But if you stick to it and you trust the system, it's something that in the long run, I believe is going to be very beneficial for us. I've used Whitetail Institute in the past as well. Loved their seed, but I really got to know Al. I think you use Vitalize Seed too now, right?
Yeah, I actually manage a property in Ohio with Al. So we just got done doing our spring planting down there. We planted close to 15 acres a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's awesome. So that's the video I think I reached out to you on then.
Yeah.
Y'all had like shit-eating grins all over the place. That was awesome.
Well, when you have four guys show up to help and you have the right equipment, it makes a huge difference. You can smile and have fun instead of breaking equipment and getting frustrated all weekend like I did most of my habitat career.
100%. Unfortunately, right now, we're for the most part doing stuff by hand. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a side-by-side, but the problem with our property is everything gets flooded and we're kind of at the top of a mountain range, essentially. Okay. And we get a really, really hard freeze. Everything around us, like, you know, a mile in this direction, a mile in that direction, kind of like thaws out early. But since we're so high, we get such a late thaw. And then we get all the runoff from whatever is above us in elevation. So our food plots are literally saturated until July, August sometimes. So all of our spring stuff is done by hand or with a backpack sprayer, which was kind of miserable last week, I'm not gonna lie.
Been there.
You know? Yeah. You know, so it's just, I don't know, man. I feel like it builds almost like an appreciation for the work, right? Like, sure. You know, kind of like that. We'll always joke around about how, you know, dads like to stand outside on a Sunday after mowing their lawn and kind of just, you know, appreciate what they've done. But for sure. Where I live right now, we don't have a lawn like that. But the food plots are kind of like my opportunity to stand back and say, okay, I did this. Right. Now let's see what comes from it. You know, and it's really exciting. But what I was getting at was I actually linked up with Al completely by accident. I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. I was having some issues with my food plot and I had heard a podcast where Al was like, if you have any questions, just call me, man. I'd be more than happy to help you out, whether you buy seed from me or not. And I'm the kind of person that's like, well, if you're telling me to call you, I'm calling you.
Sure.
You know, so I reached out and he spent an hour on the phone with me knowing that I wasn't going to buy anything from him. And he walked me through it and he's like, you know, if you want to send me your soil test, send it my way. I'll take a look at it. We'll see what we can do. And I kept that in the back of my head. I never ended up sending it to him. I felt like I might have been taking advantage of him if I sent it, to be completely honest with you. And this past year, I reached out really. It was more for the support that I got from him. And that's kind of like the people I want to surround myself with. You know what I mean? Right. It's not about the greed. It's not about what can I get for me. It's about what can I do for you? You know, and when I got that type of feeling from Al and from Jared, I was like, hell yeah. Why wouldn't I use Vitalize Seed?
Super, you know, genuine, so, guys, for sure.
100%. So this year, it was my first year putting Vitalize down. I went out, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, and I sprayed everything with glyphosate. Didn't care if it was good or bad. I killed everything because I have had nothing but trouble getting control of my weeds over the last 5 years. You know, 1 year, this half of the food plot is under control. And then the next year, that's, you know, got weeds in it again, but the other side is under control. And I never took the time to say, you know what? We're not planting anything until I get it under control. So that's kind of like where we're at this year. Have you ever experienced anything like that? Have you ever had, like, you know, fields that you just felt like nonstop just kept coming back against you?
For sure. Especially if you're working with hand tools, which I did for a lot of years starting out, you know, just like you, backpack sprayers, hand seeders, trying to get stuff to the grove from just broadcasting because you couldn't really work the dirt too much. Yeah, it can definitely be frustrating, but, you know, we're all trying to limit our chemical usage, of course, in this day and age. And like you mentioned, that no-till is the way to go if you can. You can have success broadcasting it even without a no-till drill, but it's a little more challenging. You're going to need a little more seed. But yeah, that's not uncommon. You're going to have years, especially, you know, the weather patterns change. So 1 year might be perfect for chickweed to grow. The next year it might be perfect for mare's tail to be prolific. It's a constant battle. And you're always going to be fighting it for sure.
It really is. And again, because I'm not able to get control of it, I feel like I'm just adding to the seed bed every single year, mm-hmm. you know. And even this year, I went out and I made sure, I mean, we got blue dye, we got the whole nine. I made sure I sprayed every square inch that I could see. And even then, I still didn't get control of the grasses.
Right.
And now I'm kicking myself because I feel like I forced the seed into the ground trying to hit my timeline versus trying to read the field, I guess you could say. Yeah. Now, the backside of that is, after talking to Al, he said I could either choose to spray, you know, those grasses with a grass specific and a broadleaf specific, since I only planted the clover this, you know, from Vitalize this year, just so that way I could have the ability to take care of other stuff.
Right.
So I could either get in there and spray, you know, the grass specific and broadleaf, or I can kind of just sit back and wait, terminate everything again at the end of the summer, and then hit it with carbon load. And I'm kind of torn between whether I want to clear the table or not. So what if you were in my situation, battling the weeds, not sure what to do from this point forward, how would you go about trying to make this work?
Well, I think it's worth, you know, doing the extra step if you have the time and the finances. It's just an extra step of spraying. Instead of just cleaning the table, try to put some Nitro Boost down or some other early season spring planting. You can even use a Roundup Ready product too to try to get the weeds under control. Something like a soybean to plant over the summer. You can spray, you know, Roundup Ready. You'll have some food there for the deer, and then you can come back in the fall and either cut it or just broadcast right into it when the leaves turn yellow. But I think it's worth putting out. Even if you get a lot of weeds in the summer, you're still going to have some food there mm-hmm. for the deer, and then you're going to spray again anyway. So you might as well have something there for the summer to keep those deer interested.
I hear you. I saw a big difference this year when it came to the turkey. Like last year, I had turkey in our fields. Now, we in total, I have about an acre and a tenth, give or take. But they're kind of separated between one, two, three, about four different areas where we've kind of been adding as the years go on. And what I found last year and the year before, we had turkey everywhere. I mean, they were strutting in our fields. They were on camera. We had like a flock of, I'd say, I don't know, 20 or more. And this year, they've kind of been non-existent. And I thought it was because the chicory wasn't there. You know, I'm sorry, the clover wasn't growing like it was last year. Then I got there this year, and there was clover everywhere. So I don't understand what the heck happened. I don't know if the property was too wet and they just weren't liking it. But this year was supposed to be my first year getting into turkey hunting, and it kind of never happened.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of spots, as you probably are aware, around the country that have had turkey numbers declining. And it's so spotty, too. There's like no rhyme or reason to it. I've even noticed that around here in Pennsylvania and some of my properties in Ohio. It's just boom or bust.
Yeah, and it seemed like this year, I went to sleep one night and everything was brown, and I woke up the next day and everything was green. Yeah. It seemed like spring popped up out of nowhere. You know, when it comes to food plotting, years like that, where you kind of have a late start and everything kind of explodes all at once, how do you go about managing your food plots in a year like that?
Yeah, spring and summer plots are tough, especially when you get a lot of rain and you got that weed competition. Again, like I said, if you're not using a two-part system like Vitalize with the Nitro Boost, I'd highly recommend something Roundup Ready, whether it's alfalfa or soybeans or something else that you can plant. Once it gets weedy, you come back and spray over it. It kills everything except for the plant that you put in there, because it's just a struggle until you get a couple of years down the line when you start to build that soil. Like this year, we had, I think, two or three fields that we had just converted the food plots about 2 years ago. This will be the third year using the two-part system. And I do all the spraying, and I went to spray those fields this spring, and they didn't even need sprayed. There wasn't a single weed in them. It was just the carbon load that came back from the fall with the crimson clover, and I'm going to screw up all the stuff that Al puts in that. But everything came back, and little to no weed competition. But that's just a product of building that soil for over the last couple of years. And I was actually blown away by it.
Yeah, I can't wait for that to happen. And I fully expect it to. You know, it's just a matter of getting the cycle going. Mm-hmm. It seems like every year, you know, if our summer plot is great, our fall plot fails. Or if our fall plot is great, the spring and summer plot fails.
Right.
I haven't seemed to be able to kind of put it all together for a full year. Have you ever experienced that, you know, getting started on a new field?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, many times I've had to replant, you know, midsummer, and then you get into a drought and you're screwed until the fall. And then you try to clear the table again and then get the fall stuff planted, and then the rain never comes. I mean, it can be very, very frustrating. But, you know, that's where it's good to be diversified and have some different crops around. You know, maybe establish a field of alfalfa somewhere that'll run you from spring to the rut. You know, depending on your location, I don't know how far north you are, but alfalfa usually stays pretty green till, you know, early November, mid-November. So mm-hmm. That's something, you know, you can incorporate. I think it's all about, you know, diversifying. You know, it's kind of like your financial portfolio. If something fails, you've got 10 other things to back it up. But to be honest with you, I've never seen anything like this two-part system that Vitalize came up with. I mean, once you get the soil dialed in and you're just planting twice a year, that's it. That's all you got to do. Honestly, I think this year we could have left the carbon load go, but I get it from Al's standpoint of wanting to get that nitrogen into the soil and boost it again for the fall. So that's why that soil has become as good as it is.
Sure. And I mean, we're almost at 100% green up in the mountains of New York, which means the majority of the country is in spring or summer food plot mode. If you're in the market for some seed this year, you have to make sure the Vitalize seed is on your list. Whether you're running a traditional system or a no-till system, they've got you covered with products like Annual Clover, Clover Plus with Chicory, or their 1-2 punch of Nitro Boost in the summer and Carbon Load in the fall. They've also got natural amendments to help give your food plots and seeds the boost they need to thrive. More important than that, Vitalize Seeds' focus starts with the soil to help solidify your plots for years to come. So whether you're looking for some seed this warm season or simply looking for some answers to your questions, head on over to VitalizeSeed.com to find your solutions.
Good as it is.
Sure. And I mean, it makes sense. You know, it seems like, and I've used other brands, 1-2 punch. You know, I know Green Cover with Dr. Grant Woods, like they have mm-hmm. their system going. And before he was with Green Cover, he had the Buffalo system, I believe he called it.
Right, right.
And then you could kind of do the same thing with Whitetail products, like Whitetail Institute products, if you read the bag and kind of put it together yourself. But it seems like Vitalize is the only company that's saying, hey, we're going to go really heavy nitrogen now and really heavy carbon later. And in a full year, we're going to have the right ratio. Yeah. But each planting, the ratio is completely, you know, one-sided, if you will. And I really like that. You know, I like overloading it or the concept of overloading it one at one time and then overloading on the other end and the other, because now I'm not a biologist. I don't know if this is accurate, but it's like if you drink too much all at once, you really feel it. But if you drink the same amount like in a night, throughout the night and maybe you don't feel the buzz as much, you know? So I feel like just from in layman's terms, I feel like it almost shocks the system into doing what it's supposed to just a little bit faster. Like I said, I don't know if there's any, you know, merit to that.
Yeah.
But could be.
I'm glad you had Al on to go into all the technical details because that's who I lean on for all that. I mean, he does the research. This is years of testing for him, and you're going to start seeing other companies trying to play catch up with him now. But he's always experimenting every year, trying to tweak it, making it better and better. So good luck to those people trying to copycat him.
And what I love the most is like someone like me who, you know, the difference between a completely flooded out field and a nice field is maybe the difference in 4 inches of rain in the spring, you know. And what I love about his blends is between the sun, you know, the nitro boost and the carbon load, you end up with something around 30 different species of plants being planted throughout the year, which means no matter what your conditions, there's something in there for every condition that's going to grow. You know, and it's almost, in my opinion, a built-in insurance policy for the weather.
Absolutely.
Have you experienced that? Have you ever had a year where you're like, man, I'm really glad I used this because I don't think anything else would have grown?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we just came off one of the driest years in Ohio history last year, and things struggled, and we were blown away that we even found anything green in that food plot. And we'd come back there and got ready to plant for the fall. That nitro boost somehow hung on and got those long tap roots down there where it could get what little moisture was left. But coming out of a historical drought like that, it was shocking how much food we had available for the deer.
Yeah, and we had same thing in New York. It's been dry almost everywhere. I think I read somewhere we're in like a 3-year long drought, which is just absolutely insane. But with all of the, you know, with all of the thatch that I had, even with our lackluster food plots over the last few years, I mean, we have a pretty decent layer of thatch. And what I ended up doing last year, now I don't know if it helped me or it hurt me, but after the spring, it was too wet for us to bring a mower on and we didn't have a crimper built just yet. Hopefully by this fall, I have a neighbor who used to own a steel company and we ripped apart an old hot water heater and we're going to weld some angle iron onto it and create our own little, you know, towing harness. Sure. And hopefully we'll have a DIY crimper ready to go for this fall. But last year I said, hey, you know what? If I can't crimp it, maybe I can weed whack it and still get the thatch on the ground. Now, I think what that in the long run, I think that hurt me because I think that promoted more growth from the old stuff and didn't quite let the fall stuff grow. But what I noticed was with all of that thatch laying on top of the ground, even in the driest conditions where everything else around it was dry as can be, when I'd pull that thatch away, not only was the soil moist, it was dark, you know, so
for sure.
I see the benefits in this even when I'm not what I would consider successful.
Right.
So I can't wait to see what's coming around the corner once I figure this stuff out and the train gets rolling. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so you're getting two things there. You're getting the thatch that's not only holding the moisture in, but that's breaking down and feeding the soil with all the bacteria and everything else that comes with the breakdown of all that old vegetation there.
Exactly. Now, one of the other reasons why we chose to go no-till, and I don't know if you heard this in the podcast with Al, but it was almost out of necessity, to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. My day job, I'm a teacher, you know, and for the most part, I'm the manager of our family property. You know, my brother comes out and helps whenever he can, but I'm pretty much the person, you know, purchasing the stuff and going out and implementing the work and stuff. And I found really quickly that if I continued to buy fertilizer, I was going to go bankrupt. So what I really like about the no-till is it almost saves me, or at least I think it's going to save me a lot of money having to throw fertilizer into it every year. Is that something that you have found that in the long run, no-till saves you money?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because like you mentioned, that 30 plus species of plants that are in that mix, you know, they're all bringing something else to the party. Some are fixing nitrogen, some are fixing potash, you know, some are fixing, you know, whatever they bring to the party. Like I said, you're getting it naturally is what I'm trying to say. You're getting your fertilizer breaking down naturally, and that's definitely going to limit your input costs and leave a few bucks in your wallet at the end of the day.
Exactly. And what was really cool to me is I don't know if you still follow, you know, Growing Deer TV and Dr. Grant Woods and everything.
Loosely, but, yeah.
He just sold, I forget, I think he called it the Proving Grounds, right?
Okay.
He just recently, I think last summer, sold the Proving Grounds 1 and purchased the Proving Grounds 2, which I think is on the opposite side of the same mountain range that he was on originally. And his goal is to reprove that the no-till system works to the point where I think he's putting zero inputs into the soil. I think like his goal is to prove it works without doing anything, including lime. How do you... Have you seen that also? Have you seen the need for less lime or no lime through running the no-till system?
Yeah, I give him credit if he's going to start from scratch and not do any of that. That's going to be interesting. I've never gone that far. We've always, you know, started out with lime and herbicide and as much as we can to speed up the process. But like anything else, if you've got the time and the patience, there's certainly plants that you can put in there to speed up, you know, bringing up the pH is what lime does for you faster, but it's just going to be more of a commitment and more of a bean game.
Sure. Or do you think, like, obviously when you put the inputs in and you put lime into the soil, it fixes it quicker, but does it also recede faster when compared to allowing the plants to correct the lime naturally
or
the pH naturally?
Yeah. Depending on the soil type that you have, it certainly can disappear as fast as you get it. I've seen that happen before too. So yeah, naturally by having that plants regenerate and break down and getting that cycle going every year, that's going to reproduce more success for sure and more stability to the soil.
I can't wait for that to happen. I really can't. Like I was talking to my brother recently. I was like, man, because I told you before we started recording today, my wife and I, we just had our first child like a month ago.
Yeah, my brother, congratulations.
Thank you very much. My brother has an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old. And in New York, where our family property is, you can't hunt until you're 13. Mm. So that's my timeline. My timeline is I want maybe not running at full capacity, maybe not done. I don't think I'll ever be completely done with what I want to do. But I my goal is, you know, 5 years from now to at least have the property running in a way that, you know, we can go out and find success every year. Because we all know there's nothing that's going to hook a child to the outdoors more than finding success as fast as possible.
Absolutely.
You know, so is there anything that you could recommend as far as food plotting goes? Well, let me backtrack. Is that for someone who's listening to this that is maybe trying to do a food plot for the first time, what would you say is an issue that they're 100% going to run into and to not allow it to turn them away from it?
Well, if it's your first time and you don't know what kind of soil you're dealing with, that's probably going to be one of your first battles is, you know, get that soil test. A lot of us, like you said, being a teacher, you're busy. You're like, I don't have time to... When I'm out there, I need to get this work done. I don't have time to pick up soil and send in and get a sample. It's worth doing. That's going to be your biggest indicator of how much success you're going to have right off the bat. So don't skip that step for sure.
100%. That was like one of the very... So the first year, we didn't do anything. I was just in the same boat.
Yeah.
Man, we'll just go buy some seed and we'll throw it down and we'll see what happens. And to be honest with you, the craziest part is that might be our best summer plot to date. You know, we just had grasses growing like crazy. I mean, we had like 4 or 5 foot grasses. Granted, it was probably rye grass versus annual rye. So who knows if it was even worthwhile, you know, but it was awesome. It was booming. And then the next year it was like, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm. That's the bad thing about that. When you have success, you know, not doing a soil test, you're like, I don't have to waste my time doing this. And then, like you said, you get blindsided on the next year.
Yeah. So the way we ended up doing it was after that first year, I was like, you know what, maybe we should do a soil test. So I ended up buying like one of those do-it-yourself at home kits and realized really quickly, like, I didn't think those results were going to be accurate.
Right.
So then I ended up doing some soil tests through Whitetail Institute and found where my pH was. And I think I ended up dropping somewhere like 6,000, 8,000 pounds of lime throughout the whole acre over time. And then once I did that and I saw kind of like what my starting point was, I basically was like, I can't afford to drop this stuff again. Wherever this gets me is what I'm starting with. And we're just going to have to make it work from here. You know, and every year it seems like something different grows well. Every year the clover grows well, without a doubt. 2003, the triticale grew really well.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, not so much. Every year rye grows, because anyone who's had rye in the bed of their truck knows it grows in like a pile of leaves. You know what I mean? So I'm just little by little figuring it out and trying to kind of keep an eye on what species tend to do well every year. You know, because maybe in 5 years I'll realize, you know what, only five of these species are growing really well. Maybe I should just plant those five and call it a day.
Sure.
You know, but again, at the end of the day, I know that I can't keep dropping this stuff in. So my goal is to run that system that just keeps feeding itself, and I know it's going to come. So it almost takes a little bit of pressure and weight off my shoulders, knowing that, okay, I don't need to get lime down by this time, and I don't have to worry about getting the fertilizer down at this time, because it is what it is. Now, what I have added into my soil, which seems to work fairly well, we tried Deer Grow for a couple of years. To be honest with you, I wasn't happy with the results. I felt like it didn't make that much of a difference, to be completely honest with you. And then I found Antler Grow, which so far has been doing really, really well for us. Have you ever had any experience with that?
Similar products. Vitalize does have Umix and some other soil amendments that we've used and had super success with. You know, like I said, I can't speak to the Antler Grow and any of the other stuff that you've tried, but they are beneficial if you're using the right thing, for sure.
So let me ask you this, because I don't know if what Vitalize has is like the same type of product. What's really cool about Antler Grow is like states like New York, where you're not allowed to bait, you're not allowed to mineral, you're not allowed to do anything. The only thing you can have is a food plot and whatever amendments you put into your soil. That's it. So Antler Grow has this product that you can use, and it's all micronutrients that you could either spray on the soil before planting or right after you put the seed down, you could put this into the soil, or you could wait until you have stuff growing. So a post-emergent, you just spray it on the, you know, like a foliar application.
Sure.
And what it's supposed to do is it's intended to give the deer the micronutrients that they would get from, say, a mineral site or a licking block where you can't put it out. And it also helps the plants grow. Is that something similar to what Vitalize has? Because to be honest with you, outside of the seed, I haven't dove too much into, you know, the other stuff that Vitalize has.
Yeah. Well, most of the minerals that those deer get to grow those big antlers are coming from the soil, first of all. So, you know, by taking care of the soil, it's everything that we've talked about. But yeah, they've got fish fertilizer. They've got all kinds of other foliar application products that you can put on. I mean, Al's got an extensive list of things over there that's part of the system, and accessories to work around it too. So definitely recommend everybody go over there, check it out on his website.
Yeah. And I've said this before, you know, I think I record it every week, but guys, even if you have a question, if there's something you're not sure about, even if you have somebody else's product and something's going wrong, I mean, Al loves talking soil amendment, soil health.
Oh yeah.
You know? So if you got any questions about any product, seriously, give him a call. Like he is the guy to talk to. Now, when it comes to lime, what do you prefer? Do you prefer granular, or have you used liquid lime at all? And if you have, which one do you prefer?
I've never used liquid. I've used the powdered stuff, the ag lime and the pellets, but we normally put pelletized down. It's just easier to pick up a pellet and put it in the spreader and go. Sometimes the ag lime will get a little bit lumpy. I know some people have had some good success with the liquid, but I don't have too much experience with that.
Okay. I actually got a funny story for you. So, I don't know, this is probably 3 years ago now, and I think it was the first time we got lime. So, I go to the store, I pull my dad, I mean, I think I had my dad's, like, trailer for the Kubota. I brought our Kubota trailer to the ag place, and I loaded it up with thousands upon thousands of pounds of lime. I pull it across this bridge, which since has fallen apart. I don't even know how my truck and this lime made it across. Man. I get up to the top of our hill and I get stuck in the mud with my pallet of lime. So now we're just unloading from the pallet. Mind you, this is mid-March. There's still I don't know, 6 inches under the soil is still a sheet of ice. It is freezing. So my cousin and I, we go and we start spreading the lime. I had bought like a drop spreader to try to use, not realizing that it wasn't going anywhere in the mud. So next thing you know, we're ripping these bags open. I think I had 40, 50, some ridiculous number of bags of lime. Mm-hmm. And we're cutting them open and just walking around, spreading them like this. Next thing you know, it starts fucking snowing. Yeah. We were sitting there in March spreading lime in the snow and ice. My cousin goes, F this, I'm out of here. I was like, what do you mean? We got all this work. Next thing I know, I'm spreading all the bags myself. It was an absolute insane experience.
Yeah.
You know, guys, in today's day and age, scents, lures, and attractants are a big part of our hunting experience. When it comes to choosing a product, we here at Wing and Tail look no further than Rack Getter Scents. At Rack Getter, you'll find unique, innovative, one-of-a-kind products that bring the deer in and keep them coming back for more. They also have products for bear, turkey, fish, and more. Most importantly, being a local small business, Gerard hand delivers every product to his dealers, so you know he's got his finger on the pulse. So if you're looking to up the odds this fall and you'd like to support a local small business while doing it, head on over to ratgettersense.net and check out what they have to offer.
Experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to tell you that that's never happened to me, but I've been there. That's not fun.
No. And then even in the summer when we dropped, I think we dropped lime that spring. And then later in the summer, we dropped another round of lime. Mm-hmm. And that time I got a bunch of help and, you know, we were using the drop spreader. But our fields are not like smooth. You know, with all the water that's running through it, there's ruts from the running water. There's right. ruts from the cars and the Kubota and all that stuff. So I'm sitting there trying to push this lime thing. And I'm bouncing all over the place and it wants to turn over and it dumped out a couple times. And I'm sitting there, you know, shoveling it back in with my hands, you know, so it's definitely been an experience so far.
Oh, yeah.
But I enjoy it. It's good exercise. You know, it's a good opportunity to get out and listen to some music and, you
Absolutely.
Know, just get in tune with the outdoors, you know, so I've been enjoying it. Is there anything about food plot? I know we've kind of, you know, just kind of like brushed on the surface, but is there anything like any advice you have for new food plotters or even people who might consider themselves veterans that might help them moving forward?
Yeah, definitely. Also to go along with always testing your soil is use a exclusion cage. That's another thing. It's like the end of the day, you get everything done and you just want to rush out of there. But you know, there's times when you might have an overpopulation of deer and they're just wiping your food plot out and you think, man, nothing's growing here. And having that exclusion cage will give you that opportunity to evaluate your plot, see exactly how much growth you actually get. You'll be shocked. Especially if you got a high deer density.
Yeah. And I haven't, I'll be honest, I have been awful with my exclusion cages. Every year for the last 3 years, I'm like, oh, this year I'm going to build them. And then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, but this year, I actually just yesterday picked up my T-posts from my parents' house. I picked up like five, I think. I think I need to go buy five more. And I'm just going to do like, what size exclusion cage would you do? Like if it was a circle, what would you make the diameter of your exclusion cage?
I probably wouldn't go anything less than, you know, 4 or 5 feet around. Should be good with that.
Okay. Like 4 feet across?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like a 6 or 7 foot section of fence, cut it and roll. We use the welded wire mostly. That's what I use for protecting trees and making mm-hmm. exclusion cages with. So yeah, we go, if you get a 100 foot roll, and I'm trying to do the math here, I think if you do 7 foot, you can get like 14 cages out of it.
Okay. And like, if you had to give a number, like one for every 100 square feet or whatever, like how big of an area do you want for each of your exclusion cages?
Just one for each plot. Doesn't matter if it's half an acre or 4 acres, as long as you got okay. one somewhere that you can measure that.
Just to get an idea.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's half of our problem, to mm-hmm. be completely honest with you. We do have apple trees scattered throughout our property. We have one area where they're very concentrated and then kind of just spread out from there. But the crop is a hit or miss. Like last year and the year before, we had some really late frosts, which honestly, I'm kind of worried about this year again. And, you know, the trees were starting to bud, the frost came, and we got no apples for 2 years straight. Mm-hmm. Last year, we got apples, and all the deer that we had seen in the past all of a sudden showed back up again. And the moment those apples were gone, the deer were gone.
Right.
You know, so as of now, with the type of property that we have, I guess you could say, everything kind of hinges on the apples, especially since we haven't really been able to get the food plots going. You know, so I'm hoping that once we're able to get the food plots up and running, maybe the apples get them to come and the food plots kind of keep them around for a little bit longer.
Sure.
But I think as of now, the way our property lays out, it's more of like an October, maybe early November. It seems like that first week of November is like the last hot opportunity for us before those deer kind of scatter and find somewhere else to go. Either that or, you know, just a missed shot, or, you know, we bump a deer a little too hard. And see, the problem with our property is it's 130 acres, which isn't, you know, it's not big, but it's not small either. You know, it's a decent right. size for the three of us for now.
For sure.
But our only access is road frontage and then everything else. So our property is essentially like a rectangle, but it's not like the long side is on the road or the short side is on the road. It's kind of catty corner to the road.
Okay.
So we have the only place we get access is along the road, but then we have to walk across our property to get pretty much anywhere else.
Right.
You know, so I got to try to figure out a way to either screen stuff or, you know, have some dead space put in there or something, because I feel like our access is killing us more than anything. And even with the food plots, I mean, they're only going to take so much. And we have some neighbors who don't hunt or don't hunt that much. They have places to go to not be bothered, which is what kind of makes me a little nervous. Sure. It doesn't take much to ruin it for the year.
Yeah, you could try to set up access where the people aren't hunting on those borders. You know, put your scent down there if you can work it out. But it's tricky depending on your wind and how you got to get in and out.
Yeah. My listeners know this, but hopefully this year, my only number one priority other than my food plots this year is I have to spray pretty much 100 acres of our 30 to kill all of our ferns. Like, we are just completely littered with hay-scented fern.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, give or take, our property was basically reset. Like, the forest was reset, but it doesn't seem to have been managed properly. So a lot of beech wood, a lot of undesirable maple, some ironwood had really kind of took over. And the more desirable maples and cherry trees never really got a chance to come back. So it seems like our forest is really, really choked out. We don't have like a lot of trees that are even climbable. You know, a lot of our trees are, you know, 8 inches or less, which makes it really difficult to even find a tree to hide in.
Right.
There's not a single oak tree around, one in our entire, not never mind our property, there's not one in the entire mountain range. And in talking to our forester, we come to find out that a lot of our area used to be pasture. And essentially, they just let it grow fallow and kind of let it come back how it wanted to. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, a lot of those shade, how do I want to put it?
Shade tolerant ones, yeah.
Exactly. The non-desirables tend to be the faster growing species, you know, and if you're not managing that. So anyway, we were told that we can't schedule our harvest until we get the ferns taken care of. And then once those ferns are taken care of, it's kind of like the beginning of all of our property management. We have like 10 to 15 acres total of food plots being cut out. Whether we keep that food plots or we make a bedding or we put in, you know, like a chestnut orchard or something is yet to be decided. But we're also going to get like new trails put in and new systems put in so that way we can access from all over the place. And it's kind of been everything's, I've literally, everyone laughs at me because I have an iPad and I draw everything on there. And I've redrawn like a food plot designs. Like, I've been doing this for years. Right. And all of it is just a dream because it's all been put on pause because it all hinges on getting the harvest done. Because once the harvest gets done, we'll have the money to do some of the other stuff. And then once we get that stuff cleared out, it's just as easy as throwing seed down and, you know, starting the process from day one. Right. So really what I'm looking at right now is I'm using this acre that we have now kind of as like my, let's figure out how to do this shit. So that way when the big stuff comes, we're ready to go. You know, that's kind of my...
Sounds like a good plan.
That's where we're at. Yeah, man. So let's transition to waterfowl, because I have been out one time ever in my entire life. We all missed the only duck that came in. And then I think two or three of us shot some snipes, I believe they're called. It was an awesome experience, though. Like, I love just kind of like sitting in the blind, bullshitting with my cousin and his friends and stuff. And it's something that I've wanted to get into. But to be honest with you, it seems more daunting than just about anything else that I want to do. Like, turkey hunting, okay, you get a decoy, you don't get a decoy, you get a call, you go out, you figure it out. Mm-hmm. But it seems like with waterfowl, it's, you know, you need decoys, and not just decoys, you have to know how to put them out. And then once you put them out, you have to know how to call. So someone like me who's never done it, how do I go about getting started?
Well, you have to move from our area. No, it's tough in Pennsylvania. I mean, there's some really good historical duck hunting along the Delaware River and the New Jersey border. But, you know, since the industrial age and the population sprawl, that's kind of gone by the wayside. But you still can find some decent populations of ducks, and especially Canada geese. I mean, those things are everywhere.
Everywhere.
Nowadays. But just like we were talking about food plots, you know, keep it simple. Like you just mentioned, well, I got to get all these decoys. I need to learn how to put them out. That's all stuff, you know, that we kind of put on ourselves because we love the gear. We want to get more decoys. We're like, okay, we got to try this pattern of putting them out. But honestly, the biggest thing when it comes to duck hunting is learning how to hide properly. And anybody can do that. If you take the time, number one, find out where the birds are at. Obviously, it's just like deer hunting or anything else. You got to go. You got to scout. You got to find the places that the birds want to be. And then number two, just hide from them so they can't see you. You don't even have to be a good caller. or you don't have to call at all. If you get where the birds want to be and you stay hidden from them, they're going to naturally come in. And you only need, you know, a couple of Facebook Marketplace decoys to pitch out there if you want. So it's, you can make it as complicated as you want, which we, all of us outdoorsmen, tend to do. We love gear. We love to carry a bunch of stuff that we don't need out there and make it look real pretty. But yeah, simple is always better.
Now, a couple things there. First off, I think it's awesome that you kind of like ambush them the same way you can deer. I never even considered that being an option ever. When it comes to making things more more difficult, or, you know, going to the extreme and having all this gear, why do you think we behave that way? Do you think it's, we want the challenge, we want that added challenge, or do you think more people do it because they think it's going to make it easier, even though we know it's not?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think people think, well, I didn't kill any ducks today because I only have a dozen decoys, so I'm going to go get another dozen. Or this shotgun isn't good enough, I got to go get another shotgun. And we do tend to make excuses, because it's not us making the mistakes or not getting the animals. It's something that we're lacking that we have to go and buy. And that's just being a consumer-based society, I think, too, that makes you think you got to have this to do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, because, like I said, up until now, like, waterfowl seemed like the most daunting thing ever. So how would someone go about scouting ducks? Like, I know deer, I look at a map, I find some topo features that I like, I go and walk to them, I either find sign or I don't, and then I take it from there. So yeah. How is scouting for waterfowl similar? How is it different?
Well, you can cover a lot more ground, I think, for waterfowl hunting. Obviously, deer can't fly, so you got to, you know, be ready to put the miles on, because ducks and geese can be here one day and 100 miles away half a day from now. So be prepared to travel. But, you know, it depends on the species, too. We're lucky. We have a lot of wood duck around here in western Pennsylvania, and I'm sure where you are as well. And people don't think that because they never see them. But if you would ever get in a canoe or a kayak and just let the current kind of float down and stay still, you'd be shocked at how many flocks of wood ducks that you will bump off of that little creek just running by your house there.
That's pretty cool. So my wife and I, like, we just moved to Pennsylvania. We're not from here. We're actually from northern Jersey. I've kind of been everywhere. We're from Jersey. I went to school in Pennsylvania. I lived in New Hampshire for a couple of years, which I don't know why the hell I came back. New Hampshire was freaking incredible, you know. But when we moved here to Pennsylvania, my wife was like blown away, because we have, I think, wood ducks. Do they nest in trees?
They do.
So last spring or whenever, is it springtime when they nest?
Oh, yeah.
My wife saw a bunch of them. So last year I was teaching in New Jersey, and she kind of moved out here half part full time kind of thing before me. And she was like blown away because she kept seeing these wood ducks kind of jumping from tree to tree, and she could never get a picture of them.
Yeah.
And I was so jealous, because from what I understand, they're like one of the most beautiful waterfowl out there.
For sure. Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah. And they're probably one of the better tasting ones too.
Really?
Maybe the top. Oh, they're delicious.
Why is that?
I think because they have a diverse diet of really good vegetation, and they'll eat a lot of acorns too. You know, it's like venison. You know, when they get on those acorns, it's kind of like finishing cattle on grain.
That's fair. I dig that. Because that's like the gripe you hear about goose all the time, right? Which, by the way, I don't agree with. I've had some freaking awesome tasting goose before.
Yeah.
But I look at it almost like bluefish, right? Like, if you go out and catch a bluefish, you don't know how to cook it, it's going to be the worst tasting thing you've ever had.
That's it.
You know, but if you know to soak it in milk overnight and pull those oils out, I mean, it's absolutely delicious. You know, but that diversified diet, I'm sure, makes a huge difference too.
For sure.
Now, the other thing that probably scares me more than anything when it comes to waterfowl, and typically I don't like to use the word scare, but I think it's appropriate here, is identifying birds on the wing. And knowing what you're shooting at, you know, because let's face it, like, the fines that you get if you shoot the wrong thing or too many of a certain species, some of them can be steep, right?
Yeah.
So how would you recommend going about to someone new, figuring out what they're shooting and what they can or can't shoot?
Yeah, again, that goes back to, you know, overthinking things. I mean, it's daunting at first if you've never identified a duck before, but they all have characteristics. It could be pitch black, and you could tell just by their back end, you know, what their tail feather looks like going by. You don't need to have light to identify them, even to that point, but it's just practice. Nowadays with YouTube, you know, you can go on, type in how to identify ducks for hunting, and there's some great videos on there. Ducks Unlimited has a great app. It has a waterfowl ID that you can scroll through and look at the picture. But they're also different. That's the cool thing. You know, you think about ducks, and there are people that aren't familiar with it. They might think, well, they probably all look the same. But they have so many distinguishing features, from the shape of their wings to the colors to the shape of their bills to the shape of their tail feathers. I mean, there's a ton of ways, and it doesn't take long to pick it up. And then, you know, you get to know the ducks in your area. You know, mostly we're hunting mallards and wood ducks here. Okay. Occasionally you'll get a few other species in. But, you know, those two are pretty easy. Everybody pretty much can figure that out quickly.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking mallards and wood duck, I mean, they're like worlds away. Mm-hmm. Now, my thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine that it's a lot easier to identify the difference in a male versus a female, right?
Sure. Because
aren't the males like way more colorful and be in like the behavior also?
Towards the end.
Whether you're a competition archer stepping to the line in the finals or a hunter drawing back on your personal best, you owe it to yourself and the animal to have the best functioning equipment out there. That's why when it comes to bow or arrow components, the Wing and Tail Boys pick Fire Knock products every time. Every product they make is proven to outperform anything already on the market by 50% or more, and they have the science to back it up. They've even made it so easy to find the components specific to your arrow shaft with their FireKnock Arrow Component Selector. If you're ready to up your equipment's performance today, check out FireKnock.com.
You're also?
Towards the end of the season, they start to get their breeding plumage, yeah. But early season, it could be a little tougher.
Okay. So they're similar to pheasant in that sense. I used to work at a pheasant farm, and I was blown away at like their whole brooding, you know, process mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And, you know, how they lose feathers and all this stuff. I was like, what in the world is going on right now? Like they all looked, I've never seen this. And then for the first time I saw, have you ever seen a silver pheasant?
I don't think so.
Dude, they're freaking incredible. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think it's something similar to like an albino deer type okay. of thing where it's like, where it's like a, I don't know the word for it, but it's like something's either missing or they have too much of a chemical or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's one of those coveted things that like people want a silver pheasant. And I had never heard of them before. And what I found also is people who want to get like a pheasant mount or something, they don't go out and shoot them. They go to a pheasant farm and they go, I want your biggest, fattest, nicest looking cockbird.
Oh, wow.
And they just take it home and do whatever they want to do with it, which I guess makes sense because if you blast it out of the air with the wrong number, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
That's not going to look nice on your wall.
Sure.
So when you're talking the difference between deer hunters and duck hunters, which ones are more protective of their hunting spots?
Oh, man, I'd say it's about equal for me. I mean, I'm pretty tight-lipped with my deer and duck spots. I'd have to say it's pretty equal.
Okay. That's a very political answer. I'm not sure I like it. You know, because I think fishing, right? Like, how do I want to put it? So when you go fishing, certain fishing spots are good or better than others. But and you can definitely outfish an area.
Sure.
But I don't think you can outfish an area as easily or as quickly as you can out hunt like a deer hunting spot. Sometimes it just takes one bad sit to ruin a spot for weeks. What is that like in the water, like in a waterfowl situation? Is it easy to out, like over hunt an area, or is it because they're migrating? It's kind of like the next day is the next day.
Well, ducks get imprinted by their parents like a lot of animals do. They'll go to the same places to feed and breed every year unless the pressure keeps them from doing that, same as deer. You know, we talk about food plots. That's one of the things we're trying to do over the years is build a property, and those adult deer will imprint those food sources to their offspring, and it makes it a lot more patternable. So yeah, mm-hmm. the pressure is going to be pressure, whether it's on waterfowl or deer. You might get away with it some of the times when there's a big push of ducks migrating and some of the younger ones that maybe don't know the dangers and what to look for. But as a whole, you know, you can overhunt a spot for sure.
I got you. Excuse me. Now, transitioning for a second back to deer, because I always wonder about this. In your lifetime, have you noticed that deer nowadays tend to look up a hell of a lot more than they did when you were younger, as far as like looking for danger from above?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm able to quantify that, though. You know, I don't know if they... The only reason we know they look up is because we're there when they do it. Like, how mm-hmm. often are they doing it when we're not there?
Yeah.
That would be my question.
That's fair. Because I've had deer spot me in certain trees, and then I'll switch trees, and they come back, and they look right back in the tree that I was in last time.
Hmm.
You know, and it's like, man, how did you even like the next year? It's just like we're always told like deer can't rationalize, and they don't have that processing situation. But then you right. see a deer do something like that, and it's like I don't know, you guys might be wrong with that.
I think they can just see something that doesn't belong. You know, they walk through that woods, you know, a million times, and then all of a sudden there's a big blob on the side of the tree.
Yeah. You're not wrong. That's why I kind of like the idea. Like, I'm not a huge, in the last few years, I've kind of gotten away from set stands, and I've started to become more mobile with like a hybrid kind of setup. It's like, I wear a saddle, like the XOP has a saddle / regular harness. So yeah. I kind of like, you know, bounce around and do both of them type of deal. But I've always also kind of liked the idea of putting, like a sweatshirt up in a tree, or like, some people like to put like some kind of scarecrow or like a blow up doll or something sure. up in a tree, like sure. throughout the summer. Have you ever tried something like that or known anyone who has?
No, I've never tried it. I've seen people try it. I don't know. I think hunting the deer and not letting them know that you're there is the best thing, instead of trying to put something out to kind of try to fool them. I mean, it makes sense. You know, you put a big box blind out there and eventually they get used to that and come in and feed right next to it. But my buddy Al always says that those things are like glorified cattle with antlers, you know, or billy goats with antlers. I think we give them a lot more credit. I think it goes back to like we talked about with the gear. We're looking for reasons why we weren't successful. And I think we assign a lot of things to them that they probably don't deserve.
Yeah. But then you don't give them enough credit and you get your ass beat. And it's like, you don't know which way to go. You know what I mean? Are you, how, and this could, you can answer this either deer hunting, waterfowl, or both. Are you the kind of person who likes to ease your way in throughout a season and say, okay, I'm going to start here and each sit I'll move further in? Or are you the kind of guy that's like, if that's where I want to end up, I'm just going there from the beginning and I'm just going to get it done? How do you like to approach your hunting?
Yeah. Well, trail cameras, especially cell cameras, have really changed how we hunt, especially on private property. I mean, there's no reason to go in there. And I hate to say it like this, because you shouldn't put, or at least I should say, I shouldn't put as much faith in those cameras, because let's face it, they're mechanical things. They're not always getting the real picture. And I'm cognizant of that, but we rely so heavily on those now. We do a lot of waiting and waiting for the bucks to make mistakes. And that's huge whenever you're setting up a property, to give those deer a place where they're like, I come out here and eat at this cornfield or this vitalized food plot or every night, and nothing bad ever happens to me. And you just wait and watch with those cameras and like, okay. And then when the wind's right and you can get in there and then not have them know that you're on them. And we kill a lot of deer that way. As far as waterfowl, I'm a little more aggressive. I'm mostly hunting public land. And it's kind of here today, gone tomorrow type of thing, especially when the migration's going on.
I got you. So I'm gonna paint you a picture. I know we're right about an hour. I want to be mindful of your time here, but I want to paint a scenario for you. And this is pretty much what has been going on for me for the last couple years. We have, the way our property lays out is, one side is relatively flat with, like, you know, a downslope from the mountain down to the road, but it's all consistent. It just goes down. Mm-hmm. The other side of our property, we have a finger coming in off the short side of the rectangle, and that comes in off of the range of our neighbor's property. This finger kind of drops down and then comes in from the left side too, down through a drainage. And all these, there's the amount of sign that is in this drainage is absolutely insane. I mean, there are rubs, there are beds. And honestly, you look at it and you're like, why would a deer want to be here? For the most part, it's open. And then it gets a little thicker with like heavy and stem count and stuff like that. But like really, really thin stuff, like 2 inches, just really, really thick. Wouldn't be able to get a shot in it type of stuff. And they kind of walk down the middle and they eat through the apple trees as they go down. And then he comes down and they split. And they could either go one way to the food plot, or they go one way to the apples, or maybe they go to the apple and then circle around the bottom and go to the food plot. Now, my thing is, because these deer are so skittish on our property, I've always played it easy and said, okay, this is where he ends up. So why don't I just start where he ends up? And then he doesn't end up there, and he's somewhere else. And then I push into the property and try to, you know, get him further into where he starts. And either I don't see them, or I get bumped out, or something happens, mm-hmm. right? So if you had a situation going on like that, you know the deer are kind of doing roughly the same thing every year. Now, I don't know quite where they're betting. They could be betting on top of that finger, but they very well could also be betting on somebody else's property on any given day. If you were running that situation and you kind of have this same pattern recurring every single year, how would you attack something like that?
Well, being private property and you having the ability to manipulate the whole scenario to what's best for you, that's what we try to do. We try to find a spot, one that they want to be, but you want to combine that with a spot that's easy for you to get in there. You want to combine it with a spot that has recurring food year round. You kind of want to accessorize all that food with other things that will attract them, a little water hole. Try to put as much as you can, fruit trees, chestnut trees. Keep them coming to that area where you've got a consistent wind and you can get in and out of there undetected, and just wait until they make a mistake. I mean, on public land, I get it. If guys are trying to track down a buck and they want to get aggressive, there's times I'm sure that works out. But I've learned, especially from Al, I mean, I kind of scratched my head when I first started hunting the same property as him. I'm like, why don't we go in after? Do we know where these bucks are coming from? He's like, just be patient. We're going to set this up over here, and we're going to wait for them to make a mistake. And when I started watching that over and over and over and over again, repeating itself, these giant bucks getting comfortable, just walking out, you know, in broad daylight to get whatever they want to get, and the light bulb went on. It's like, man, if you can control everything, make it all in your favor and just wait for them to make a mistake.
See, our biggest problem, and I love that. I've been trying to figure that out. You know, like I said, we have the apple trees and they definitely go for the apple trees. Now, our problem is they come from deep in the property towards the road where all of our access is. And they're typically closer to the road in the morning, which makes it very, very difficult to access the property without them knowing that we're there. Mm-hmm. Now, we can hunt in the afternoon, don't get me wrong, but it seems like we have a lot more action in the morning. So it's like, it's a catch-22. You know, it's like, I kind of have an idea of where I should sit. I just have no idea how to get in there without bumping mm-hmm. those deer in the morning, you know? So it's like, I think one of these years, I just got to do it. You know, last year we had this one food plot, and I think I talked about this in the podcast I did with Al, but we had this one deer, our number one hit list buck. I have never had a deer more pattern ever. I knew what day he was going to come, what day he wasn't going to come, what wind he liked, what wind he didn't like, temperatures, the whole nine. Opening day came and he never showed up for more than 4 days in a row. That fifth day, he never came back, but the sixth day, he'd always be back. So in New York, it opens October 1st every single year. So last year, we're leading up to opening day. And I don't know, how many days are there in September 31? So let's say September 30th, buck shows up. 31st, buck shows up. I look at my wife and I go, he's going to be there tomorrow. And she goes, Chris, it's Wednesday. You got to save days for when the baby's coming. And I was like, yeah, but he's going to be there. And she's like, just wait until Friday. I'm like, okay. So he shows up Wednesday. And I go, that's day three. He's coming tomorrow. And she goes, it's not Friday yet. So I didn't end up going that day. Thursday, yeah. I didn't go. He shows up Thursday. Same time. Anytime after 3:30, he's there. So Friday, I go. I knew in my gut that he wasn't going to show up that day, but I went and sat anyway. Saw a bunch of deer, had a lot of action, saw some coyote, but I didn't see him. So whatever. Yeah. My dad goes and sits the following Saturday, has a shot and misses. Mm. So it was like, and once that happened, we saw him three more times at night, and then he was gone. Never saw him again for the rest of the year. Yeah. And that, like, on one hand, it's like, what more could you want? You got your target buck. You had a shot at him. You didn't capitalize. But on the other hand, it's like, is our property really that bad? Like, you get one shot and that's that.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I probably should have explained a little further. You know, that the system that we're using, you know, we're working with 400 acres and we've got neighbors that have that size properties or bigger, and they're all on the same page. If you've got a lot of pressure around you with 130 acres, you're going to have to do something probably a little bit different than us. It's just going to depend.
Yeah. And go ahead.
But if you can make your property the best habitat there, the least amount of pressure, and you start getting bucks hanging out there, I mean, I've seen it time and time again. Those bucks get 4, 5, 6 years old, 7 years old. You almost can't run them out of a place if they feel comfortable. Even if you walk in and almost step on them, they're like, well, this never happens. I'm just going to come back because it's safe here. I've been here for three, 4 years.
Yeah. That's like me. I wouldn't even say I'm that old yet. I'm already getting, you know, set in my ways. Like I got these places I like to go. I got these places I don't like to go, you know? And I think the other side of this, that too, and I should have mentioned this also, is because of what we have and our canopy being so thick and, you know, those beech trees make a really, really tough mid story to deal with.
Oh yeah.
We don't have a lot of undergrowth. I mean, we have patchy, and I mean, very small patches of like greenbrier here and there. We have a lot of blueberry bushes around our property. But for the most part, once the leaves fall, I mean, you could see for a country mile. So it's no wonder that the deer kind of vacate our area. Mm-hmm. And the thickest area on our property and also in the mountain range around us just happens to be our property on the roadside. So when all the cover disappears from the rest of the property, they're right in our basically only area of access.
Yeah.
You know, which also makes that really tough. So again, back to what I was talking about before, everything now hinges on this harvest being done. Because mm-hmm. once the harvest gets done, we'll have the early succession. You know, we can change things as we want. And, you know, my goal is to make these food plots and then have a different type of fruit tree in each food plot
right.
that drops each at different time of the year. Maybe some persimmon. Like I know Morse Nursery has some really great persimmon that is it persimmon that drop pretty much like you can get them any month from September through January almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of my goal there, you know. So I actually need to get a hold of them and talk to them about what would or wouldn't grow well in our soil types and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I'm really excited for the future. And if I can make it through the tougher times, we're really going to appreciate and enjoy the good times when they come.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got one more question for you. It's going to be a hard one. If you could only do one for the rest of your life, deer hunting or waterfowl?
That is a hard question. I'm going to have to say waterfowl.
Okay. How come? I'm curious.
I've been blessed to be able to travel quite a bit with my job, and my wife's pretty understanding, and just the places that I've been to see waterfowl. And there's so many other places I haven't been that I want to go see. So, you know, I love whitetails, you know, most of my life chasing them here in Pennsylvania and Ohio. And I've been blessed to go to Texas and Kansas and Wyoming and a few other places to chase them. But I just feel like there's a lot more waterfowl places I haven't seen yet.
That's awesome. I like the sound of that. You might have just convinced me to try to actually get my feet wet in waterfowl here, man. I'm excited. I actually had a musician on the podcast a little while back, and I asked him the same question, except I said, if you could only play music or hunt for the rest of your life, which one would it be? And you would have thought I was like a shot to the heart. Like he did not know what to do.
I bet.
You know, so Brian, is there anything that we didn't touch on today that maybe you want to mention or bring up before we wrap it up here?
No, I think we covered everything. If you want to learn more, I still do some work for Habitat Podcast. You mentioned some of the videos you saw me post over there. You can find the Habitat Podcast on all the socials. They have a website, do some work with Vitalize with Al. We do a lot of testing down at the Ohio Test Farm. You can find us vitalizeseed.com. Or if you want to learn more about migration waterfowl, we've got a podcast that comes out every Thursday. We're on all the podcast platforms and all the socials at Migration Waterfowl.
Heck yeah, man. This is the Thursday crew. I didn't even realize you guys dropped on Thursday. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Brian, I want to thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. Love the conversation.
Thanks, Chris.
I mean, I don't think we mentioned this, but I think this is really like the first legitimate conversation we've had. You know, you've been very supportive of what I have going on here, so I'm really thankful for that. You know, it's always nice to get a little, you know, a little boost, I guess you could say. You know,
because
in the early days, you kind of look around and it's like, am I doing anything worthwhile here? You know, like is anybody even catching on to what I'm doing? You know, and right around like the 30, 35 episode mark, I started to have people kind of reach out and kind of, you know, start to talk and whatnot. And it's like, all right, you know, and I don't know, it's all about education for me. Being a teacher, it's, you know, I really want to bring the education and, you know, maybe try to get the questions answered that a lot of people either ask or don't want to ask, you know?
Yeah. So, there's two different types of people. There's people that listen to podcasts and there's people that don't. And the people that do normally listen to as much as they can, especially if people are traveling. So it's huge to have, you know, people that you can share their content or collaborate with. I've had some really successful people that have kind of helped me out along the way. So I try to give back and help shows out like yours and anybody else that I come across, because, you know, if somebody's interested in my content, they're probably going to want to start listening to yours too.
What I love to do for anyone who's trying to fit in as much content in as little time as possible, I love to set it at like 1.25 time or like 1.5 playback time, mm-hmm. and just have it play. It's just fast enough that you could get through a good amount on a drive, but right. still slow enough that you could pick up on like each individual word and what people are saying.
Sure.
And I've like doubled the amount of content that I'm able to intake, right. you know, so that's, you know, I really enjoy
that's
that.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So again, I want to thank you for joining us here today. I had a great conversation. Hopefully our listeners really got some enjoyment out of it as well. You guys know the drill. If you like what you heard today, drop on down below, leave a nice 5-star review and a written review. Don't forget right now for Truth Sticks Custom Arrows, we are running a special. If you leave a 5-star review down below, I'm going to ship your arrows out to you free of shipping. I will cover the shipping for you. If you follow us on Instagram, I'm going to take off $5. And if you follow us on YouTube, I'm going to take off another $5. But depending on where you are in the country, that's anywhere between $20 and $25 off a dozen arrows. How can you go wrong? I want to thank you guys again for joining us today. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Until next week, God bless and have a great week.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.